The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey, I'm Brian Hyatt, and this is Rolling Stone Music Now. So Julian Casablancas from The Strokes has an entirely different band called The Voids, and they're about to come out with their second album called Virtue. It's due March 30th, and today I'm going to play an interview I did not long ago with Julian and two of his bandmates, one dude named Beardo and another dude named Jake. But to talk briefly about just the history of this band, I have in the studio my colleague Patrick Doyle. Hey, Patrick.
Hey.
So you did our first and so far only story on Julian and the Voids. Just yeah. Can you tell us sort of quickly just why does this band exist? How did it come to exist? What's the deal here?
Well, the Strokes got famous when they were very young, you know, in their early 20s, and they were a phenomenon, and they started the whole garage rock renaissance with the White Stripes and the Vines, and it was a real moment in time, but it fell apart pretty quickly. Around 2006, they did First Impressions of Earth, which was a great album, but then they took a long break. Julian put out a solo record, and the Strokes still play. They still play festivals. They're a huge live act, but they don't make music as much as a lot of their fans want them to, but Julian's still a real creative guy, but he made this band The Voids and went in a complete opposite direction from what the Strokes are known as, which is, real catchy, raw rock and roll, and this is, over the top. He's listening to world music. He's listening to heavy metal and punk. It's sort of a mix of all these crazy genres that he's putting together, and he got these guys that he knew from LA, Beardo, who played with Kesha briefly, and then Jeff Kite, who plays bass, and he was on Julian's solo record. The drummer, Alex, he is in Wolf Mother, and he was a Nine Inch Nails touring drummer, so it's just a lot of rock and roll.
It's kind of like hipster LA session guys.
Yeah.
I hope Beardo won't be mad at me for describing him that way, but that's my impression.
Yeah.
And Julian's really excited and engaged in this band, and he takes it very seriously, and it used to be called Julian Casablancas and the Voids, and now it's called The Voids. And they have a new single, one of their new singles is called Curious, and at the beginning of this interview, we talk about that. So let's hear that song, which is pretty wild, and then we'll go straight into my interview with Julian Casablancas and the Voids. Maybe you guys, for the sake of the listeners at home, can go around and say who you are and what you do in the band.
Hey, it's Jules, and formerly Julian Casablancas of the...
my name's Jake, and I play bass, guitar, and synthesizers.
My name is Beardo, and I play guitar.
So you guys have a new album called Virtue coming out, and I've been lucky enough to hear it. There's a couple singles that we've heard so far, and one of them in particular has, I think, blown people's minds somewhat. The vocal stuff that's going on in that song, and where the sounds came from, the writing of it, the recording of it. How did all that work? I'm asking all you guys.
Well, that song started with Jeff. He kind of made the track, and he had the guitar, that like thing, and I kind of sang some, kind of like ripped off some like Arabic sounding, it was actually African thing. It's just like a test almost, and it just had such a weird two snakes melody from the future effect that I just, I was real excited. The record was almost done, and Jeff kind of sent the song, and then the song was pretty much done, and Jake mentioned maybe it should have another part, and I had just kind of written this thing that I almost thought sounded like, it's funny, a band I really actually don't listen to ever, Girls on Film, like kind of that I lost, but like I kind of had that thing, and so I just thought, oh, maybe that part like is more, kind of straightforward, I guess, but then of course it felt too boring, and then I was thinking, we were in Paris, and we heard all these cart street vendor guys had this, like, they were listening to this, I don't know from what country, but like, Middle Eastern vocoder, auto-tune thing. all these songs had that vibe. And so I was like, oh, let me try that for fun. And so that was the kind of in-betweens of the end. And that's my story.
I think we all got into that direction of music too with the artist name. I don't know how to pronounce it right, but Madhu Mokhtar. I don't know if anyone, it's M-D-O-U-M-O-C-T-A-R. Incredible guitarist and singer.
Yeah. I was going to say, Amir, the other guitarist, he had this crazy Schumann pedal. Is that what it's called? Schumann?
Yeah.
And it's like a $4,000 pedal guitar. It's the most expensive guitar pedal probably anywhere in the world.
There's actually living animals inside it.
And he borrowed it from somebody and he brought it in the room. And I remember, because I play guitar as well, we both play guitar. And when I heard the pedal come on, I was like, okay, I have to stand down to that pedal because I had no pedals in my arsenal that could compete with that pedal. And then Amir just started playing along with that riff. I think maybe you asked him to play that riff, and the guitar work on that is so incredible. It's like, you know, all that crazy scratching. A lot of people might even pick up that that's a guitar.
Right.
But so Jeff might had that melody, but like, you know, when the guitar got put on it, I was just blown away. And just when I heard it, I just was like, that's perfect, you know.
Yeah, and some of my favorite Amir guitar playing ever, for sure.
So he came strong on that song, and so I think that played a big role in that song. Just that sound and just the way he played it, and then in the ending of it is that part that you put in there was always like that really blew me away too. I just from the minute I heard that song, I was a fan of the song myself, and I was just like, wow, this is exactly like my favorite song, and that's my favorite song on the record. So
I feel like it kind of shows the degree of freedom you guys are allowing yourself musically. Like, there aren't really any boundaries to what this band needs to be sonically. It feels like you're going all wherever you want, pretty much. Is that kind of part of the idea here?
I mean, I think we all really like, you know, eclectic types of stuff and like underground music from all parts of the world. And I always, sorry if I'm repeating myself, but haven't done interviews in a long time. I really thought just with the internet, you know, I really thought at the beginning of the internet too, like, or not the beginning, but like YouTube, whatever, 5 to 10 years ago, I really felt like, oh man, you can hear anything and just any kind of, you know, style of music from any country. And I really thought, man, music's going to get crazy and there's going to be all this stuff. And that just like totally did not happen. Because of, I don't know if it's Spotify or just like top 10, top 40 generating playlists. Vibes. I mean, yes, it'll maybe, you know, recommend a Misfits song you might like, but it's like, it's really just, I'm surprised at how not worldly and underground, universal, cool world music has like permeated. I mean, it does a little bit, but not, it's more like about scientifically profitable mainstream music, because when you just look at the numbers, and not that I give a shit about statistics, but just, you know, you go to YouTube and you see like, oh, like all my favorite stuff has like 100,000 to 1 million versus like the billions and billions and billions of, you know, pop stuff. It's just kind of like, oh geez. So there's like, for every cool music fan, there's what, like 200,000 to 300,000 like people that like, you know, One Direction. I just confusing. Sorry, I don't, am I bumming everyone out?
No. But it sounds like you're sort of being the change you want to see in the world, doing the kind of music you wish.
Like Gandhi said.
Yeah, as to quote Gandhi in a completely incongruous context, that's what we're here for. Well,
we were talking about that last night, about just everything, like everything that we all do and the voids, and be it whatever, anything, just any band, anything that we touch, like a cultural movement. Like, I think that's what's necessary. Like, the only, like, if you just think about it as your band, I don't think it's enough. It's like, even the videos that we do, or the teasers that we do, or the art, everything that we touch or do, we try to like physically touch it ourselves, and not just like, here, RCA, take this or this. And we don't really care. Like, we just want to go on stage and we try to like look at every piece that we have, and we make our own videos, and with assistance from other people that we have worked with the whole time, Warren Fu, people like that, and Sean Everett, our producer, with this record and our first record. So it's a cultural movement thing, I think, like, you know, with Sean, with even any band, The Voids, The Strokes, whatever it is, it's like we're a group of musicians and friends all trying to push music in a direction that's better than where it's at now, you know.
There's people like Ariel Pink and...
Yeah.
Who else?
We'd love to tour with all those bands.
Yeah.
We'd love to do one massive tour with all of our favorite and cool and make a big cultural
movement. You were starting to make a list that started and ended with Ariel Pink. Who else would be in that list?
You know, Blood Orange, Mac DeMarco. Listen to such random eclectic stuff. There's a lot of awesome bands that have like one or two cool new songs that I know that I might not know their whole arsenal. So I guess the borders are almost like financial constraints. Like you can creatively we don't have any kind of constraints, but I guess we want to also have people hear it too. I don't know.
You said you told one of my colleagues that you felt like on your solo album you were thinking too much about what people might want to hear.
Well, yeah, I thought, because to be honest, I kind of had like written, I kind of almost divided stuff into two categories, which I kind of I don't regret because I'm so happy where I ended up now, but at the time, I kind of regretted. I basically had stuff that I liked that was weird, that was, you know, not in a key, not like going by musical rules, and weird and dark and stuff that I personally really loved. And then there was more like kind of, I don't want to say happy sounding, but safer sounding stuff that I thought, okay, if I venture out alone and I do this, you know, people might just think it's some weird side vanity, like, don't listen to this thing. So I kind of went with the more kind of safer stuff. And also I recorded all in the box, and like, which I regretted. As soon as we started rehearsing for the first solo thing, I was like, oh no, I realized like this song should be faster and that part's too long. And writing songs
with the box live, meaning Pro Tools.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Writing with musicians is really what I love to do, and or, you know, bouncing off people and doing it like live in the room is kind of, I think, really where it's at. And so there was a couple, yeah, so there's like many layers of kind of regrets, and then then afterwards it was a long quest to find like cool, like dream team musical soulmates and a wavelength of like the kind of stuff I wanted to do, and took a long time, but then eventually there's the voids, and I think we, you know, dialed a little bit of a distant date into the time machine, and I think what with this last record we kind of wanted to make a record that still was forward thinking, but that maybe more mainstream, bigger audience would love as much as we loved the first record.
Leave It in My Dreams is the other song that came out, and it's another great song, perhaps not as wildly experimental as the other track, but really cool, and kind of a, I hate to say it, but kind of a classic Julian chorus. Like, it really feels like you, it feels familiar while being amidst fresh stuff. Are you aware of that thing I just kind of mentioned, that you have things that might sound familiar, that might be moves or sounds that we associate with you? Is that something? Because I know there are artists, you know, it's like there's a famous Bob Dylan story, like they told him in, you know, in the late 70s or early 80s, like, have you tried it? Like, what if you just, you know, played an acoustic guitar and harmonica? And he's like, that would be how Bob Dylan would do it, was his answer. Like, he's so aware of, you know, what people expect. So how does all that work for you?
No, I really just, because wherever we're at, wherever we're listening to, whatever we want to make is kind of like, you always want to move forward. And I think that I've experienced that. I've been to studios and I'm like, you know, maybe I'm like howling, or I'm just, you know, we're doing a song, I'm like, can you just do the Julian thing? And I'm just like, oh, like, you know what, like sing like Lou Reed, or like, what exactly? I can imitate most kind of musical styles and people, so I can also imitate my old self. There's that's like not what I was doing.
There's like a Pro Tools plugin that they put on. It's just a Julian thing.
There probably is one. Let's face it. Yeah. Like a first two Strokes album vocal sound plugin. I bet someone's probably made one. Not to scare you.
I can access it, but I'm just interested in whatever I think sounds cool, and I'm not trying to just bury the past, but I guess repeating it, I guess, is smart maybe financially, but it's boring to me creatively.
And let's hear Leave It in My Dreams for a moment. What do you guys remember about that song coming together?
Well, Jake came up, the verse is, the keyboard part was just a Jake song that was really cool, and we played that, and then the chorus, I think, was something that I brought in the chords. I didn't really have a singing, actually I had a different melody for it, and then we played it as a band, and
I did that one riff, that da, ba, 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 and you were like, what is that riff? I was like, it's nothing.
It's a hit.
It is.
I was like, no. And that's another good point, is that when we're in the room, Julian will just be recording every incremental little thing that is like said or done, like, and that things that maybe we think aren't important.
Well, not everything, like some like essay creep. I just, if something cool is happening,
if something's cool, he'll be like, mark that, basically. And then
song,
so
that song was a classic Mr. Potato Head.
I think, exactly.
Because a lot of us, we're always exchanging, either full blown songs, ideas that we've written, or just parts or beats or progression. And we'll just kind of slap them together sometimes when we're together. If it makes sense, we'll slow one down, change a key. And I think that was a result of a pretty quick Mr. Potato Head assembly.
Exactly.
So you're referring to the overdubbing process as a Mr. Potato Head, essentially.
Not the overdub, the writing process.
The writing, song. Okay.
Yeah,
because like for, you know,
chorus,
like
the verse and like the bridge are all from different homes.
Right, exactly. Like I had written the verse thing, and I think I sent it to Jules, like, hey, what do you think of this? I had actually liked the chorus part that I'd written that was attached to it, but he gravitated towards the verse, and I was like, cool. And he said he thought he had a thing, and once we were all together in the room, we tried it, and we were messing around, and Jeremy had that sort of floating intro piece, and we tagged it in, and it came together pretty quick, actually.
It takes time to get because Tyranny happened and we did that, and I was like, we had just met, and so fast forward to this record, and it's like, I think it takes experience and like becoming friends and becoming closer with each other to be open with each other to like give each other like ideas, or like be like, that could be cool here, and accept that, because a lot of times people are like, well, no, I'm not gonna, that's my chorus, and like I already wrote the chorus for it. Like, none of us are like that. We're like, you know, and that's how I think great songs can be made. Just like, so we'll put them together like that, but then when we record them, it's a long process, really, a lot longer than people think. And that's another good note with The Void, is that we weren't under any pressure or deadline to like, you have to finish this. You know, we just collected a lot of ideas and vetted them and tried them and put them in different orders and then recorded them and recorded them again and again. And, you know,
to add to that, yeah, I feel like there's two thoughts when you just said that. One is, you kind of put all this work to kind of just make it seem like casual and easy, which is, I think, an important trick.
Mm, that's kind of, that's always been your trick, hasn't
it? Like a magician, yeah. Like meticulously, posing like you don't care. But also there's another aspect that I got to say is more the music part. I feel like, especially, us together, it's really like easy in a weird way. And I feel like we could probably make like a record a month if we had time and, resources and logistics. It's more the logistics of everything that's so hard in this, to like get everything, so it took a while, but the music part, I don't think took that long, maybe.
No, I mean, I think that song was, the take that wound up on the record was maybe like the third practice take we did. And we're I think we did more after that. But we were like, oh shit, that was like loose and cool.
If you can get us all in a room together, that's the logistical side, is like, well, get everyone together in a room and stay there for two, whatever amount of time, we can just crank them out, man, with ideas and have fun. And we have these wild jams, and there's so many things right now that I'm thinking of that
I have a lot of shit to go through.
And,
we started going through some stuff already. It's
like, just new ideas, even just from when we were rehearsing, just
too
like
much.
It's insane. Mm. I don't think that happens. Like, you get a group of guys together, and it's like, that just happens when you get a group of people together.
I think
it just doesn't.
I actively stopped writing songs because it's making me crazy.
I know.
I don't let myself play the guitar or write songs because it's just too much.
I like your new method, though. The new method, it's just, may I reveal it?
What is it?
Well, you're just, instead of, like, you just sort of, like, hum a quick idea for, like, 4 seconds of each part, like Michael Jackson said, like, here's the beat, you're like, and the bass, like, boom, 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 and like, that's it. And like, all right, let's put that on tape.
That is, that's Michael Jackson. That's the Michael Jackson technique.
Huh? Although his demos sounded like, I remember I was in a diner the other day by myself, and it was Thriller, but it was like,
oh yeah, yeah,
Starlight.
That was the demo.
Yeah, I didn't know that. And yeah. I was like, and I just kind of leaned over to some, I don't know, some college fratty or jockey. I don't know. I was just like, whatever, they're nice looking guys with jogging outfits,
right?
I was like, is this, I just had to ask, I was like, is this, what is, like like the Starlight? Like,
well, what'd they say?
And he was like, I think this is Thriller. And I was like, yeah, no shit. But I'm saying, like, are they singing like Starlight? And then you texted me later. It was right. Like the demo
yeah.
of Thriller.
They made a wise choice. It. They made a wise choice.
I like yeah. that you had faith that these random fratty college kids would have the answer that, well, that
it
you
was,
did not.
There was yeah. a girl on my right, yeah, okay. there was some guys, and I was like, you guys hear this song? Like, Starlight? Like, what the fuck are we listening to? Because, yeah. You know, if someone else, and they were just like, don't talk to me. This is a new era. We don't yeah. talk to strangers.
I'm enjoying my avocado toast right now, sir.
Avocado toast.
You referred to the room. Like, where is this, like, the actual process work? Where do you guys go to collaborate? What's the deal?
Amir's house.
Yeah, I mean, we go to, I mean, we've, like, for this record, we went to Amir's house just because logistically it's easier, because a lot of us live in LA, and just to, you know, financially, it just makes more sense for Julian to come out to us, because we have a space there that we can use. Our other guitarist, Amir, he has a nice studio that he built outside of his house. We put our own gear in there, what we wanted, and just basic kind of type of stuff, and it's like, it feels like a home. And that's kind of like coolest thing about it, because we're not in a rush, we're not in a studio like, hey, you guys are on like the clock here, you have to get done. We just hang out. Sometimes we go there and we just hang out.
There's this ever-present, not ever present, but in many songs, a sense of sort of rising doom and fear of the world. Julian, one song you talk about that it, you know, we're in Germany, 1939. Where's that coming from? Not that I have to jump too far to guess, but what was on your mind as you kind of went there in the lyrics?
how to not be controversial with what I'm about to say. It would be easy to kind of jump to the whole, like, ICE and, like, Gestapo or whatever, secret police thing. But at the time, it was actually more probably a weird thought that, again, when you think of, like, race relations and issues in America, I think for me that's probably the number one kind of issue to deal with, personally. Obviously we've, like, backtracked in many ways. That's the biggest depressing thing, is the kind of progressive steps of the past, and even in my era, youth, kind of like going back on those things. But it's almost like an understanding of a weird thing where, like, with the police thing, which is such a symbolic subject, you know, more than obviously there's like economic and bigger actual things to fix it, but I think the number one thing with the police brutality is just the symbolic thing of it. You know, I think people sometimes take for granted, you know, just how police make them feel safe. And if you feel the opposite, it's a pretty, you know, hard thing to swallow. So I think it was more like, almost like the yellow David Star that they would do in Germany. It's almost like, you know, in America, it's like if people are arrested, you know, there's, you know, black people, it's like, you don't have to, like, they obviously have, like, feel like they have a target sometimes when they interact with police. So I think that was that what I meant with that line. If that makes sense.
Sure.
Too far, not far enough, I don't know. I'm just trying to keep it clean.
That was the Goldilocks of answers.
Well said.
In a good way.
Do you have a general sense of doom hanging over you? Do you feel like that there's an apocalypse or social collapse possibly coming?
The weird, and this is going to maybe sound silly, but it's like a weird thing to me how, like, movies like Star Wars and The Matrix, not that you necessarily have to be like a big Star Wars buff or that I am, but they kind of have like a kind of similar, like an accurate, weirdly coincidental accurate, where like the early ones where there's like the Empire and the Rebellion fighting them. And it's kind of like, that's kind of basically what we have a little bit. And with, you know, corporations, I'm for them. And I think a society should have great, big, happy corporations. But obviously the excess overstep, exploitation, evil excess part has kind of become more powerful than government. So blah, blah, blah. My point is that there was this kind of the dissident voices like Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, and they used to, you know, you'd see them a little bit in the mainstream, and now it's so repressed and so kind of, you know, 10 people that have to go to like RT to like speak their opinion, and now they're trying to shut RT down. You know, it's like, it's almost like the new Star Wars where it's like, there's like, you know, 10 people left on a ship. And that's like the resistant, that's like all that's left.
Well, a lot of people think that, well, I'm not going to get a debate about Russia today, but a lot of people think it's, you know, it's pro-Putin propaganda.
Well, it is, obviously.
Okay,
but,
good.
but the thing is that it's like, it's
at
like
the same time, it's giving voice to American dissidents.
It's the only way that they can actually, it's not that they're like obviously don't maybe watch like the nightly news, but they're giving shows to like people like Jesse Ventura and Chris Hedges, and they're not telling them what to say. They're just obviously like trying to like, it's like if you want to go to Russia and speak truth to Putin, you know, maybe you have to be like on an American television show or something. Anyway, I'm not saying RT is the answer, but my point is that the whole argument, the whole mainstream resistance to Trump, I think, completely misses the point. And so, you know, I think he's just like a symbolic facade puppet of like the real problems that, you know. So I just think, I think that there is like, you know, always this hope, you know, there's the internet, you know, maybe it hasn't been tapped in properly. Maybe there is this chance that somehow like something could catch on and things could change. So definitely like not hopeless, but definitely. And again, I always talk about in terms of a parallel with music, what I was bringing up earlier about.
That's what I was thinking. It's the same idea of like the potential that people thought was there is not necessarily happening the way that people expected.
Yeah. It's like quality in music is kind of very parallel to truth in, you know, politics. And I think that both are at an all-time mega repressed minority. But there is the internet, so there is hope with the internet.
Obviously, you guys have no problem collaborating. There's, you know, the vibe is there. You can collaborate in any number of ways. But your whole thing for a long time was, you know, soul song. You had soul songwriting credit for a long time. I think you once used the word like iron-fisted control or something. And you're obviously a perfectionist. You know what you want to hear. It seems like you're pretty comfortable that there's a bunch of shared credits with these guys. It's a collaborative thing. So how's it all work for you? Just the general idea of like, I can control this or I can let it go. I'm a perfectionist, but I can learn to live with it. How's all that working for you as an artist?
The truth is, I just want to be part of something that's cool and positive and amazing and next level. And that's like, I know it's a team effort. I know like by myself, I can't do everything or aren't good enough or smart enough to know it all or do it all. And I think that having the honor and privilege to work with these dudes and friends and brothers and yeah, it's just a dream come true. And it's when you kind of have that trust, and I think that's the ideal. And I think that there are high standards, though, and I think that we all have come together from our own worlds, but six people that kind of, you know, are very different, but just socially and musically really works for some reason. And I think it's not about control, it's just about like maybe quality assurance. And I think if it's there, then it's great. And only when it's you're dealing maybe with situations where people are just kind of like, you know, wanting to phone it in, then there's friction.
I imagine sometimes like Julian is a curator and an artist, and he sort of has a gallery and where the other artists he's invited to be part of it. And I think we all, I mean, he is the curator, so we always have a sense of, you know, that he's sort of the tip of the spear in terms of the vision and stuff of how it should go. But he is wide open in terms, and really, it's with everyone, it's wide open in terms of what ideas are on the table and suggestions and what direction we go. But I think Julian's a master curator. I think when he got this band together, we all almost didn't even see it. We didn't see it before he did. Because we're six very different dudes with, you know, like the Venn diagram overlap, like, there's amounts that overlap, but I think a lot of bands are like, hey, we're all four into the same music and we all dress the fucking same and we blah, 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 blah. And we're not that. So,
But we kind of do have similar tastes of like, yeah, absolutely. Agree what's great, like undeniable things.
I for sure. The overlap is like the good parts.
I'm it's important to think of, it's not about ability, because ability is important, obviously, for a band like The Voids, because it's, you know, but it's more about like, connections for, I mean, at least for me, like I felt like a connection with, like, the minute I walked into the rehearsal, I mean, whatever it was, audition rehearsal thing, because I came in a little later than Jake and Jeff and them, and I was like, went in and played, and it was the most bizarre thing, because it was just some bizarre ideas that were there, like early Tyranny kind of vibe things, and I was like, okay, I guess I'll never see any of these guys again, because I was putting my stuff back in the car, and I'm like, yeah, that was fun. And then like 2 weeks later, I get a call, you want to go to New York and record? And I was like, sure, let's do that.
Yeah, we recorded in L.A.
Oh, yeah, but that one, that was, yeah, we did it at Sean's, but then we went to New York. Oh, you thought like 2 weeks, and I thought that was it, yeah.
I think we had like jam hang, not rehearsal, but like, hey, maybe we think, yeah. And then we did a recording version of that.
So what I'm saying is that I've been in those situations before. I've been in other bands. I've been alone. And there's just not, just because you put five guys, six guys, four guys together, that doesn't mean there's going to be magic there.
Yeah.
That's, I've been in many of bands like that. And that's like, this is the first band I've ever been in that where it felt like something, we were doing something real and not just trying to like make a song for the radio, or it just felt like everybody was already over that in their life. And we wanted to do something special, something artistic, something new, you know?
For sure. Julian, I mean, I think something people would fundamentally wonder is someone is in a very famous and accomplished band. This is a different band. You know, what does this band provide for you on a creative level that your other band doesn't? Why do you need this outlet?
I feel like you could probably just listen to the record and maybe figure it out. I don't know. I mean, I think that, yeah, it's just, I don't know how to answer that. I mean, again, it's like this kind of, I think if I was completely honest, it would be harmless, but like, you know, taken out of context by like, you know, annoying me. Like, I don't care about what like a newspaper or media headline would be, but it's just sometimes if it's more about like the people you know and how it affects, you know what I mean? Someone like would read something and taken out of context by Enemy, and then like Enemy can say whatever they want, I don't care. But then like if it's like, then a friend calls me and is like, hey man, I was really bummed that you know, and it's like, ah, I don't want to do that. So like, you know, Strokes are brothers and will always be, and you know, I think that we have a chemistry too. You play that many hours together, just that alone, and you have you know, communication, and I don't feel the need to, you know, kind of, you know, shut that off for any specific reason if I have free time. but at the same time, my personal vision quest from day one has not altered, and I think that you can't tell other people what to do, and I don't want to tell other people what to do. And I think that with the Voids, I think we're on the same wavelength, and with the Strokes, it's more like everyone does what they do, and I think that I'm more about getting along and not about like, you know, tension or toxic, you know what I mean? I don't want to have to disagree. You know what I mean? I just want to work with people you agree on. And it's not that we disagree. It's just that if I was trying to do a song like Curious, I wouldn't want to have to like convince people against their will to do it. Do you know what I mean? Not that they wouldn't want to do it, but maybe in the past there are things that I've wanted to do. There's many things I've wanted to do that I haven't been able to do. So I feel like I'm all for collaboration, and I'm all for like, you know, best ideas in the room win. And I think that, to my objective judgment, that was not always happening.
Do you find that people are trying to drag you into the past? I've noticed, you know, you're out promoting this new album, and I see people asking you about like a purported feud with Ryan Adams from like a million years ago, and like things that are like, you know, I think that any artist faces as when they've made great stuff in the past and they're still making great stuff now, it's like people want to talk about 2004 or whatever. Is that something you find? Is this something that irritates you? Or how do you deal with that when you have like this iconic moment of you when you're still, and yet you're moving forward and making great stuff now? How do you deal with that?
It doesn't irritate me. It doesn't. I just don't care so much. I don't think about it so much. I don't. Only when I'm faced with it. The Ryan Adams thing wasn't that long ago.
Right. I guess it's a recent feud based on events from a long time ago. Right. Yes. Yeah.
I don't think it's a feud. Yeah. I mean, maybe it's a one-way feud. I don't know. I don't think people should get thrown out under the bus like he did in the book, but I don't really care about the book either. So I wish it well, and I wish Lizzie well, and it's just, I'm not interested in it.
More generally, that idea of past work, future work. Do you think about stuff you've done in the past? We talked about this sort of signature sound, like how conscious are you of your past image and what people expect from you musically, and how much do you just not think about that and make pure music, what you want to make?
God, I don't even know how to answer that. I think you make music half for yourself and half for other people. So I guess I've had to take things into consideration, maybe. I mean, I think the thing is it's not just about making crazy art and not caring. I think it's, you want to do something that's creatively cool and original
and somehow make it mainstream. And it was the same, you know, goal with like Cult and stuff, just try to, you know, and the Strokes too at the beginning. It's just try to do something that's like cool and not, you know, and to combat the mainstream stuff that's maybe not as interesting to me. So that quest hasn't changed in terms of old stuff. I don't really think about it. It just feels like another battle, another time in my life or something. I don't know.
Do you guys think of this band as a rock band?
Only when I want to answer the question quickly when someone asks me what kind of music I play.
Yeah. I definitely don't.
How do you think of it?
I think of it like
prison jazz.
Yeah. I don't know. I think of it like a modern sound, like when I look at art, like if I look at I don't know, if I look at like a Pollock painting or something, like it just reminds me of like an abstract painting sometimes it reminds me of like a very like classical painting. Like it's just, I think it's like a rock band is like four guys just drumming on basses and guitars, really whatever, you know.
What would you call it?
Rock. I'm kidding.
I think there's elements of rock in it. It's a band. I mean, like, I'm not sure there are any rock. There's not that many rock bands, you know. It's true. And a lot of what, when people talk about indie, a lot of it isn't indie rock anymore.
Like, what would you consider the Gorillaz to be?
Probably something like what you guys are.
That's what I mean. Like something not to say that, that we're trying to be any of these bands, but Radiohead, like in elements of like Kid A or something like that. It's like they could be a rock band, but they could also be like modern.
So is Bon Jovi. So it's like a weird.
But not to sound like a twat, but that's kind of what the band name is about. Is that we exist. We don't know.
We existed between the existence of everything else. I don't know. We don't try to like do any of that. I don't know. We just go in a room with us and try to make cool music, and we'll let everyone else decide what they want to put on us.
So yes, we're a rock band.
Yes, rock and roll.
But see, it's a weirdly productive question. My my colleague asked Johnny Greenwood if Radiohead were a rock band recently, and he got so mad.
I mean, I get. I think it's also just I mean, maybe like a white singer who doesn't sing too good. It has to be or something. I don't know.
Like, yeah. I was at NAMM and I saw a rock band there.
Right. Well, you know, it's in hip hop, people now talk about rapidy rap, which is hip hop that's very a little bit old fashioned and it's kind of like technically oriented and maybe as melodic as.
Wow.
And
it sounds insulting.
Yeah, it is insulting. It's basically like dad rap, you know. And so I was thinking we need a term rockety rock.
So we need new names now.
Rockety rock is like the first Def Leppard album or something, you know, just like rock, you know. So you're not rockety rock, that's for sure. I'm pretty sure. I think
that. I mean, there's like a lot of cool, like, because the thing is, you know, metal is such a thing, but I feel like there's like a Mount Rushmore, like, it's like Velvet Underground, we were talking about the other day, it's like Velvet Underground, you know, the Stooges, Black Sabbath, and that's kind of almost, in terms of like heavier, but like melodically cool forward, or even maybe the Doors, because they were, you know, more like musically advanced in like the kind of Velvet Underground, like during the Beatles. Basically, I almost feel like there's like a veering off, like the Beatles, everything. Because I think I was thinking actually this morning about it, because in my hotel there's like a Revolver album. Not an actual. Anyway, put a gun in my mouth every morning, thank God.
Dude.
No, I just think I'm kind of like, I have that maybe advantage that I didn't like or listen to the Beatles or something. And I feel like that's almost like the branch of like 98% of stuff you hear. But then there's like, I think Velvet Underground, I know Lou Reed hated the Beatles and obviously loved John Lennon too, but not obviously, but anyway, so yeah, I think there's like there's a lot of hard music that, you know, maybe Misfits kind of come close. But anyway, my point is kind of like harder music. Yeah, there's not really it's like, you know, you don't want to say metal because, I mean, that's not like what we do. But there's definitely elements of that we love. So I don't know. Punk is too kind of, it's almost like it has to be about like rage and like non-skill. You know what I mean? So it's like a weird jazz meets, you know, wish metal was.
We're back to prison jazz.
Another good band would be
hip hop. We all love hip hop.
Like Daft Punk's another good, Gorillaz, the kind of thing, like with these bands that are doing like this modern expressionist kind of thing. So I don't know. call it what you will.
I love rappity rap.
Rappity rap.
What's this?
Respect your elders.
So you're listening to Rolling Stone Music Now. I'm Brian Hyatt. That was me interviewing Julian Casablancas in The Voids. And we'll be back next week here on SiriusXM's Volume, Channel 106, at 1 p.m. on Friday on Eastern Time. In the meantime, download us as a podcast. Subscribe to us as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Spotify, or wherever. And maybe leave us a nice review, especially on iTunes. Anyway, we will see you next week. Thanks for listening.